A.
It's time for you to step up to the plate, lace on your cleats, and buckle up your chin strap. This is the Sports Fix at 6. Your chance to win today's prize from 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Made it to hour number four of Sports Talk with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. A lot coming your way before we step aside at 7 o'clock, and we can go ahead and tell you that Tennessee, the Volunteers, after breaking the 1-1 tie with two in the bottom of the third, tacked on five runs in the bottom of the fourth and another in the bottom of the fifth, still batting, two out, Tennessee 9, Arkansas Pine Bluff 1. You've had a number of guys that have done their part. Jordan Beck, three runs batted in today, has a double and a triple. Two runs batted in for Max Ferguson, a pair of hits for Connor Pavloni. So a number of Volunteers taking part in and having a hand in building an eight-run lead as they play in the bottom of the fifth. Right now, it's your chance to win. It's the Sports Fix at 6. And, Jimmy, I know that the prize tonight is a place that's near and dear to your heart.
Absolutely. $25 gift card to Payrose on the Hill. It's located on North Shore Drive. It's in the Rocky Hill area. Payrose serves great Greek food, Italian food, everything in between. And you can visit them online and view their menu at www.payrosebarandgrill.com. $25 gift certificate to Payrose on the Hill if you can answer this trivia question. So Tennessee takes on Vanderbilt. That's Wednesday night. Which Tennessee player scored the most points in a single game against Vanderbilt? Which Tennessee player holds the record for most points scored against Vanderbilt in a single game?
656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free. For AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers, the toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. We start with Andy. Hello, Andy.
Hey, how are y'all?
Doing well. Hope you are good.
All righty. So I've got a guess that feels just too good to be true, feels way too right, probably because of his recent success against Vanderbilt, but I have no other choice but to go with him. Is it Grant Williams?
It is Grant Williams. I thought
that
might be a bit of a layup, but yes, it is Grant Williams. Do you know how many points he scored?
He hit 23 for 23 from free throw, right, and had 37.
Yeah, there you go. God, we ought to give you a $50 gift certificate, but they don't allow me.
Hey, what do you
that's a good job. Congratulations to you. You've won a $25 gift certificate to Payrolls on the Hill. Great restaurant. You'll love it. Sammy runs it, does a wonderful job there. It's a lot of fun, a good place to eat. And so, Andy, we are one and done. Nice job. Grant Williams holds the Tennessee record for most points scored against the Vanderbilt Commodores.
I appreciate it. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, we know you'll enjoy it. Hang on the line so we can get your prize information. And that takes care of the Sports Fix at 6. That was short and sweet, but good memory by Andy.
Yes, it was. Nice job by him. I tell you what, while we've got some time here, let's go ahead and hear from Tim Banks again. Tim Banks, Tennessee's defensive coordinator. He joined the nation on Sunday night with Austin Price and with Chris Lowe. And he talked a little bit earlier about some of what he's looking for. Here are more comments from Tennessee's new defensive coordinator, Tim Banks.
Tim, this is a group of players that have been through a lot of coaching change. You know, you had the investigation. You got all new coaches coming in. What has been your message to your kids? And what has sort of been your takeaway and what you've heard from them as you guys get ready now for spring ball coming up and going forward from there?
Yeah, you know, it's always tough anytime you have a transition. You know, a lot of these guys obviously signed up, you know, for a different staff. But as I told every one of my players, you know, when I signed that contract, you know, these guys became part of my family. They are they're my kids. I might as well sit in their home. You know, I fall in love very easy. You know, when I sign a dotted line and I told those guys I'm going to love them, you know, I'm going to put them in situations that are going to help them grow not only as football players but as men. You know, I said trust is earned over time, you know, but it works both ways. You know, I work as hard as I can to earn theirs, and I expect them to do the same thing with what they do and how they carry themselves day in and day out. And then with that all being said, you know, we're going to have great urgency about our business. So I'm excited about the guys. You know, I know it's been a tough journey, you know, again, with the transition, you know, but I think we got some competitors in this building, you know, that's excited about the opportunities that lay ahead.
Coach, you sound like someone who really respects the history and the tradition here in Tennessee. What were your first, you know, recollections of Tennessee football, maybe as a kid or even just growing up in the industry and as a coach? I mean, what did you look at it from afar? What did you think of it? I mean, I know you've predominantly coached, you know, in Big Ten country, but at the same time, you know, Tennessee's such a national brand. Kind of what were your thoughts before you got here?
Well, I coached at the University of Memphis for a few years, so, you know, I've been down this way, and I understand what that Big T represents and the pride that the people have in this great state of Tennessee and really in this region and across the country. So it's obviously a place that has developed a lot of or had a lot of great players come through here. But, you know, obviously for Reggie White to Peyton Manning, you know, to Witten, you know, it's just the list goes on. So for me to have a chance to be a part of this, you know, this university, to me, you know, it's only a few like this, you know, in the world. And for me to have a chance to be a part of it, it's very humbling and, like I said, super exciting.
Tim, we talked a little bit about this a minute ago, but, you know, the game has changed so much. Gosh, I think of the way it's just changed in the last 10 years and the way it's evolved. On both sides of the football, and certainly on offense, everybody's going tempo, they're spreading you out. From a defensive perspective, how have you seen it change the most, and how do you think going forward to combat what teams are doing on offense, will it continue to change?
Well, I think it's what you said. You know, they're going to play extremely fast, and they should. You know, it's a probability game. You know, the faster you play, the more stats you get, the more likely they got a chance to, you know, create big plays and score touchdowns. So we just got to be able to match that intensity. You know, we have to be able to be multiple. You know, if they figure out what you're in, you know, and they know exactly what you're getting, you know, that gives them the edge. You know, so as much as that we can play fast, you know, keep it simple so the kids can execute, I think it plays in our hands. But, you know, we don't want to be overly complicated because you never know week in and week out what you're going to get from different offenses. So, you know, you want to put a system together that allows kids be able to play fast, make battlefield decisions, and be able to out-execute guys. Because the reality of it is, you know, if you don't, you know, a team may be three wide, all empty, you know, running a play this week, and then the next week, you know, it's totally different. And if your kids don't understand it and doesn't have a great grasp of your system, you know, all of a sudden you're down 14 points before you blink your eyes. So we just want to be fast, and we want to be simple, and we want to be aggressive.
Coach, who had a big impact on you, you know, both as a player and as a coach? I mean, when you look back and, you know, kind of, you know, a mentor or two that helped you get to where you're at.
Yeah, I you know, that's always a tough question because there's so many people that, you know, have come in my life and, you know, I've been able to gain something from them. You know, I think of my dad first and foremost, you know, how he pushed me, you know, growing up, you know, really using sports as a vehicle to teach life lessons, you know, when things got hard, you know, not allowing me to quit, you know, and when I had some success, you know, not allowing me to, you know, think that I've arrived. So, you know, I always have to start with my dad. You know, from a coaching perspective, you know, my high school coach, bless his heart, James Reynolds, who passed away this season, you know, once again, one of the first male role models that I had in my life that wasn't my dad. And just the way he went about his business and the way he cared and loved on us as players, and then in turn disciplined us, you know, is a leadership style that I use to this day, you know. But it's been so many more. You know, I'll even, you know, James Franklin at Penn State, the guy I just left, you know, not only was he, you know, my boss, but he was also a friend, you know, and so many conversations we had about running programs, so many things that, so many, lessons that he would share with me and the staff are invaluable. So, you know, I don't want to leave anybody out because there's so many guys that have had, you know, great influences on me. But those are the three guys that come to mind right now.
How much did Coach Martinez have an impact on you? And then if he had quite a bit of an impact, then how much does that, you know, make it easier to look at the kids in your room right now and say, you know, I played for him, and you know, when I'm, you know, I'm proud of when you work hard, you know, good things come to you. You know, this is the kind of stuff that we can get done here if you guys buy in.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Coach Martinez was awesome for me. You know, he coached me my second year. And just the way he went about his business even then, you know, I remember it was unique, you know, because he was always intense, you know, but he was always, you know, fair. You know, he held us to a high standard. And, you know, you kind of understood exactly what you were going to get out of him. You know, he was always a technician, you know, making sure that, you know, we didn't take any technique that he was teaching for granted. And then, to be quite honest with you, you know, I've been able to watch him from afar, you know, as I have grown through this coaching profession. And he hasn't changed. You know, again, everyone he's been, he's done a tremendous job, you know, whether it was coaching or recruiting. And like I said earlier, you know, having an opportunity to get him in our room and share him with the players here was really a no-brainer for me.
Well, Tim, man, we really appreciate the time. It's cool to see a Detroit, Michigan kid here on Rocky Top, man. That's, I know it's been quite a journey. You know, you Bowling Green, Ferris State, Memphis, and I really love your resume. I love the fact that you've worked your way up, you know, from those schools to the Big Ten, now the SEC, and we look forward to seeing you and catching up with you down the road. We gave Josh Heupel a pass the last time we're on, so we'll give you one. But the next time we get you on, man, you're going to have to sing Rocky Top, so you better learn the words, okay?
I don't think he has to sing Rocky Top. I think you need to say Vols. Because Aaron Hayden, who's from Detroit, Michigan, says Vowels. How do you say it, Coach?
Go Vols.
There we go, baby.
Hey, Tim, man, we really appreciate it, man. Best of luck to you, and we look forward to catching up with you down the road, okay?
Absolutely, guys. Appreciate you guys having me.
Thank you.
And that is Tennessee defensive coordinator Tim Banks on The Nation with Austin Price and Chris Lowe.
Yep, and you can tune in for that at 6 o'clock this Sunday right here on The Sports Animal. We'll get a break to join us, 656-9900, 656-9900. Star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. This is Sports Talk on 99.1, The Sports Animal.
Credibility, honesty, and a dedication to bring you the sports information you deserve each afternoon. This is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Himes on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
That's how you join us. This is Sports Talk. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Himes.
And before we hear from Kelly Harper, do want to mention an update regarding Tiger Woods. And that is that he, according to the press conference they just had, by the way, it had been reported earlier about the jaws of life was used to extract him from the vehicle. That turns out that is not what happened. But they did have to get him out of the vehicle, and he did have surgery this afternoon, and he is, I don't know if he's still in the surgery. I'm not sure about that. But in the press conference we just watched, it said that he was going at perhaps a relatively high rate of speed, and said there were other accidents that also occurred as people looked over to see what was going on, but nobody was hurt in those accidents. They didn't feel like there was anything as far as him being impaired, but a long way to go in terms of figuring all this stuff out. So that was from the press conference from just a little while ago in Los Angeles. Tiger Woods hospitalized, underwent surgery this afternoon. Don't know how long that surgery's lasted. It seemed like it was a long surgery, but there was damage to his legs, but not life-threatening. So that's according to the press conference they had. All right, Kelly Harper met with the media today, and one of the things she talked about, she was asked about a player that was injured early in the season, Kalen Green from Liberty University, a transfer that played only in four games before she was injured in December with a season-ending injury. Harper addresses that as well as other things about her program.
Kelly, Renai Davis was named the SEC Player of the Week. Just talk about how she has performed the last two games.
Well, I think Renaya was able to, obviously in our South Carolina game, be a go-to player in that second half. We got her the basketball. She was feeling good, knocking down shots, making plays, and really got us back ahead and pushed us over the top. At Georgia, when we were stagnant early, she was one of the players that was actually making some shots. It wasn't easy. People are keying in on her, trying to make things tough for her, but love to see that she's still able to find ways to be successful and be productive.
Also, your assist to turnover ratio against Georgia was 3-20. How much do you focus on that statistic, and how much does that, do you think, help determine the outcome of a game?
Well, you don't want to see that number. Obviously, I think that's a number that doesn't scream success. I think that's how Georgia plays. I think they take you out of assists a lot of times, make you play one-on-one. They're a tough matchup for us because they do have good size, physicality in the paint, but their guards just get down and guard. They're really, really good defensively. Obviously caused a lot of problems for us. I thought to start the game, we had some opportunities to knock down some easy shots, and we just missed them. They rimmed out. And you've got to be able to find ways to be productive. As poorly as we played, still have a chance, you know, at the end. And I think, I don't want to discount and discredit what Georgia did, because I think their game plan was really solid.
Kelly, Sunday is going to be the last home game for this senior class. Renaya, Cassie, Jaden, what have they meant to you? As being someone who's coached them for the past the last 2 years of their career at Tennessee?
Yeah, I think they're, kind of grouped them in a couple different categories. Obviously, Jaden, we brought her in, due to injuries. It's been unfortunate that she's not been able to be on the court as much as we had hoped. For Cassie and Renaya, just to see their growth even in the small time that we've had with them has been really fun. I love all three of them. I think they all have different personalities. They've been fun to be around, and I'm proud of where they have helped this team go. And I think if you're missing that senior leadership and you're missing that senior experience, really pulling strongly, it's a big piece. And obviously this year, that's been really important to our team.
Coach, there's a fourth senior, of course, in Kian Green. Can you update us on what her plans are or what her status is right now in terms of recovery?
Yeah, so obviously with COVID and with extra years, there's so many variables right now. And, we didn't want to make decisions about those type things until after the season is over, except for Kian is in a different position. We knew she wasn't going to have an opportunity to play again this year. So we've had those discussions. And as of right now, we're excited that she plans to come back next year for another year.
Coach, with two games left, what do you expect to see from your team fix some issues, to head over to March with SEC tournament and the SAA tournament? What do you expect to kind of torque or fix in terms to start bowl season?
Well, we're hoping for some, we're hoping for good weather, good travel, and the opportunity to practice. I think that is as important for us right now as anything. We're excited about, honestly, today taking the court and trying to really work on Tennessee rather than another team, because I feel like we've been focused on our opponents for the last couple weeks more so than us. So I'm excited that we'll get to work on us and then to turn to Missouri tomorrow, and then obviously this weekend Auburn. What I'd like to see is us clean up some of the things that we need to do, some of the things that maybe we've gotten away from in the last couple weeks that could make us a better basketball team if we get a little bit more consistent. So some of that's on the defensive end, some of it's on the offensive end. Before you go to the tournament, you want to make sure you're cleaning up anything, make sure that, if there's something that really stands out, that you're working on that. And also at some point between now and the tournament, obviously we've got to worry about Mizzou and Auburn, but before the tournament, honestly, you want to go through everything you've got in your arsenal. You want to review every defense you have, you want to review every offensive play, every thought that you could possibly have, because you go over to Greenville, you go to the NCAA tournament, and you've got to pull out all the stops in those games. So you got to make sure your team is ready.
Kelly, with Tamari Key, she seems to draw some very questionable foul calls against her. And I just wonder how can she avoid that? And does that cause some frustration within her?
I think early on this season, you could see her having some frustration fouls. Now I think she's learned that her worth is greater than maybe a cheap foul. So she's really worked on that. I think it's an area still we need to emphasize. We can't control everything. So we can't control what's called and what is not called. What we can control is our actions and trying to keep ourselves as clean as possible in terms of foul trouble. And then we have to be able to control whatever is called. We've got to be able to play out of it and, not let frustration set in.
And also, can you tell before a game if your team's ready to play?
No. let me back up. Let me actually answer that. I can typically tell, I shouldn't say that. I usually have a pretty good idea. And this year I felt like we've been ready to play just about every game. I did feel like our practice on Saturday was not great. So leading up to our Georgia game, we usually have really good practices, but I thought that Saturday practice was not one of those good ones. And I thought that hurt us a little bit. And then the fact that we didn't get a shoot around because of a noon game, 4.5 hour bus ride. There wasn't a whole lot working in our favor going into this weekend. So I'm, as a coach, I'm trying to figure out the nice balance of moving on from this game versus learning from this game and figuring out what we need to be better at.
Comments from Lady Vols coach Kelly Harper. We'll get a break and be back with more. To join us on Sports Talk, 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free. For AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers, the toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. Updating what's going on at Lindsey Nelson this afternoon, the home opener for Tennessee baseball. Volunteers in the top of the seventh with one out, lead Arkansas Pine Bluff 9-1. This is Sports Talk on 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Now, back to more of the most trusted sports information on the air. Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Himes on 99.1, The Sports Animal.
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson.
Before we hear from Rick Barnes, postgame Kentucky, I do want to tell you that the Lady Vols played in the Gator Invitational Golf Tournament in Gainesville. Struggled, ended up finishing in eighth place. But Kayla Holden, outstanding effort. She tied for six. She was two over par after three rounds. She had rounds of 71, 70, and 71. She was the only Lady Vol in the top 25. The winning team score was plus 16. Tennessee was 38 over par. Tennessee losing to Kentucky by 15 at home on Saturday. Here are comments from Tennessee's head coach, Rick Barnes.
Rick, at this point, does it feel like Groundhog's Day with the up and down nature of this team from game to game?
It does, Grant. I did not think we had great mental preparation yesterday, getting ready for the game. And first half of the game, I did not think we defended the way we're capable of, but you got to give them credit. They made shots, but I also thought that they got comfortable. We had a couple too many defensive laps with the wrong guys, transition threes, not giving up too much separation, but you got to give them credit. They shot the ball well in the first half. Do I think it let them get comfortable? I do. And then we got behind. I thought we got a little anxious. Now, we've played against teams all year that have played gap defense. We knew full well that would be the adjustment they would make, that they were going to get more in the gaps. And I don't think we, well, one, we don't get stops. You're not going to be able to get out in transition as much because if they're making baskets, they're going to be able to get back and get their defense set. So, again, when they're shooting 60%, it doesn't give us a chance to run the way we wanted to. And because we weren't really moving the ball and moving bodies the way we wanted to or needed to, they were able to stand those gaps. And then it also closes down the offensive rebounding lines. But when you're not shooting well, you've got to be able to go inside and get some things done. And we can't have drop-off passes and those passes kicked out. You've at least got to try to shoot the ball. You got to try to get fouled in those tight quarter situations. And we just turn it over too many times and had too many pass outs. When, again, I just don't think you can do that.
Rick, you know, in a normal year, I guess without the COVID stuff, we'd be around more and see more practice and things like that. It's obviously different right now. Some of these inconsistency issues that we're seeing from game to game, are these things you're seeing behind the scenes the past, you know, month or so, or is it just in the games?
No, I see it. I think it's immaturity at times. I do. I think you're still trying to get guys to understand. But it's a combination. Like, we've got a team where you guys know we've got some young players that I still think are learning what college basketball is all about. And you say, well, by this time of year, they should know it. Do I think they're going to shoot the ball the same every night, play the same? No, but when they're not, you got to have the other part. Like, you look at tonight's game. Kentucky shot it well in the first half from the perimeter. Second half, they went to work inside. And whether they scored, even if they shot 20%, I think, in the second half, but they were getting fouled. So when you're not making threes, you got to manufacture other ways to score. And we didn't. And you see sometimes the guys that are the most aggressive are going to then think, well, nobody else is trying to do something. I'm going to go do it. And that's where we're not as good as we need to be as a team. And it goes back to consistency. I mean, it is. I haven't really studied the stat sheet, but if you look at their front line, you know, free throws, what, Sarr got six of them. Who else is on the front line? I can't really take because I don't have my glasses on. But I know this, we should have gotten to the free throw line more. I can see that John was 1 for 7. He was 4 for 7. And in games like this, they do need to make themselves more available in terms of – we had to go with a small lineup because then you start missing free throws and then layups right around the rim. You've got to try to get some guys in there at least you think is going to get fouled and make the basket.
Coach, you know, obviously if you look at John Fulkerson's stat line, he was 1 of 7. You know, after Wednesday's game where he had 16 points, are you disappointed in his play today?
Well, you're always, you know, disappointed, concerned, whatever. I mean, with your older players, because that's what you expect out of older players. You expect consistency more than anything. That's what you expect. Younger guys, you can see them being up and down a little bit, but yeah, and just as a team, I mean, there's not one guy that hasn't been inconsistent. I think we all know that if we can put things together, you know, we've got a chance to be a good basketball team, a team that can play with anybody. I think you got to give Kentucky credit too. They've played well over the last 2 weeks. They arguably could be on a 4-game winning streak. They won 3, could have won 4. But with that said, I mean, really and truly, I can sit here and say just the fact we got beat by 15 is probably surprising because I thought we were that bad. And in terms of what we were trying to get done and the little shots and the ones that you almost have to make in a game like this when you're struggling from 3. I thought some of the 3s were taken by the wrong guys at the wrong time. I thought we got stagnant doing that. I don't think you can get the ball and stare down somebody and then raise up. I mean, that's not how we play. You know, we play better when we move it and get going, but just overall, just not a good – I mean, think about it, we go from scoring 80-some points a couple of times, 55 today, but I can show you where, again, our turnovers allowed them. I really still believe the first – half those 15 points we gave them, and I'm not going to say gave it because they took it from us or we gave it to them any way you want to write it. But that was probably the difference in the game and allowing them to get comfortable. They're going to make some shots because they've been shooting the ball well anyway, but we just didn't ever put them back on their heels. And even in the second half, believe it or not, when we come out one time, I think if Eve had a chance to get a 3. We had he got a good look at it. Would have cut it to 11. We get a stop. We come down. Folky gets fouled, and And if we make that free throw, it's nine. Who knows? It could have been a different game, but it wasn't because we didn't make those shots. And as much as you know it and you guys know the game, I mean, when you're making shots, it all looks good. Sometimes, like, but again, I thought Kentucky was very comfortable in the first half, and I think you got to give them credit because they did make their shots.
How big of a handicap is it to, I mean, you know you're going to get inconsistency from the freshman. How big of a handicap is it as a coach when you're getting that kind of inconsistency from your upperclassmen?
Well, again, when you go back, when you start the year, we knew that we wanted to play really fast, and we knew that we felt like we would be able to do some more things shooting the ball. We thought we'd be a better shooting team. But we also know that there's nights when you can get great looks and it doesn't go in. That's where you've got to be able to count on your inside game. We thought we could do that, you know. We haven't got it. And the ones that are frustrating is you cannot, I don't think, when you get drop-off passes around the rim, kick them out. I think you got to go up, be strong, get fouled, finish those plays. And again, we need everybody. But right now, more than anything, you do need consistency from your older guys. They've been through it. They should understand it. And I wish I could fix it. You know, I do. We've talked about it a lot, and we'll continue to talk about it. But again, it might be that we're going to have to, you know, Josiah, obviously you guys know with him at the lineup, it changes a lot of what we can do when he's out there playing one of the post positions. And in terms of stretching the floor, that gives us a little more space to attack in a way that we weren't able to today. We weren't able to get that spacing that we had up there because of having four guys on the floor that you really definitely have to guard, and you're not going to give them any looks. But that's part of the game, you know, and not taking anything away from them. But, again, am I disappointed? I'm very disappointed because I just think that we should be beyond this point of the inconsistencies that we're getting.
That's Tennessee head coach Rick Barnes, and Johnny's right. They should be beyond this inconsistency. They do have enough players to where it shouldn't be a factor. They have a good mix of veteran players, a good mix of young players, and it's just kind of baffling how this team has been so up and down so far.
Yeah, it continues to be because you see outstanding performance one game, and then you just are left with scratching your head when it comes to As it was said earlier, you get 80 points one game, and you struggle to get 50 the next. So it's just I can't remember a team that had this kind of ability struggle so much and to not be able to get a hold of consistency.
And I think it goes back to basically two things. I just don't think they've identified a point guard, and they don't have the inside scoring that they need. And that's from Fulkerson, but I also think Pons is a part of that because he is a guy that most of his scoring is done inside. And see, John, I thought both Fulkerson and Pons would be 12 to 15-point scorers. I thought they would lead the way, and that's where their averages would be. Obviously, I've been wrong. Now, Fulkerson, the last 10 games of last year, averaged about 18.3 points, so we know he can do it. We saw him get 27 against Kentucky in Rupp Arena, against a much better Kentucky team than this Kentucky team. So we know that it's there. Obviously, I think confidence is an issue with Fulkerson right now, and I also wonder if the knee injury is not an issue with Pons. But I just thought both of them would be delivering in that 12 to 15-point range. And I've debated, would this Tennessee team be better off with Grant Williams, or would it be better off with a point guard like Jordan Bone or C.J. Watson?
Yeah.
You might lean toward Williams a little bit because if you just get him the ball and get out of the way, he could score. So maybe that would be the answer. But then I also think that if you had a better point guard, it might make it easier for Fulkerson or Pons inside. So
I think I would lean point guard.
Yeah.
Because I do think you have some other things. Now, granted, you are talking about a two-time SEC Player of the Year. So, in the end, Grant Williams would help every time. But I just think in terms of the biggest void, the biggest absence on this team, I think it is a consistent performance or a performer to run the point.
I think so. And then in particular, I know we're not at tournament time, but in particular tournament time, guards rule, point mm-hmm. guards rule. And I think that's why I'm not real optimistic about Tennessee making a run. Look, Mark Pankratz is right. Tennessee made a run with Konzo Martin, and they did it. They actually had underachieved during the regular season, I thought, but they made a really nice run. But there have been very few times that Tennessee has made a surprisingly good run. The only other really, quote, surprisingly good run would be Pearl's number six seed team beating number two seed Ohio State and then making it past the Sweet 16. But other than that, there have been some surprisingly disappointing exits, and that's happened far more often than the other way around. It's just kind of been Tennessee's history in the NCAA tournament. Now, they could change all that. What happened years ago doesn't have any impact on what this team is going to do. But I don't like the up-and-down nature of this team. Can you just flip a switch and correct it? I guess you could, but I think it's rare when you do that. But it can be done.
A game that was once tied at one is now in the bottom of the seventh, and it's Tennessee 10, Arkansas Pine Bluff 1. You've got multiple runs batted in. You've got two runs batted in for Max Ferguson, three for Jordan Beck. You've got two for Kyle Booker in his first Tennessee game, and Drew Gilbert has one. Tennessee has scored 10 runs while driving in eight. And, Jimmy, so far today, five strikeouts.
There we go. Good number. Well,
yes, and Tennessee has struck out the Golden Lions 14 times.
Oh, one more.
As four different pitchers have performed. But we'll get a break and be back to close out today's edition of Sports Talk as you listen to 99.1 The Sports Animal.
From the Budweiser studios of The Sports Animal.
Just a bit outside.
We are 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Final segment to today's edition of Sports Talk. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams.
John, I thought it was interesting. John Adams with the New Sentinel, he polled some folks about Josh Heupel. The question was, do you think Josh Heupel will win more games than Butch Jones? Butch Jones had 34 wins in 5 years. Heupel takes over a difficult situation, maybe more difficult than Jones, in that you've got a ton of players in the transfer portal. You don't know what your roster's going to look like. You got the NCAA cloud hanging over your head. So, in polling the folks, the verdict on Josh Heupel, of the 41 people that were polled, 21 said, yes, Josh Heupel will win more career games than Butch Jones is 34. 21 to 20 was the vote count. The fans voted 15 to 7, yes. The media voted 13 to 6, no. negative media. So, how do you see that? What do you think? Can Josh Heupel get to the win total of Butch Jones?
I think he can. And I think a lot of it is obviously going to be predicated on getting through what is going to be this first year and whether or not Tennessee has much of a carrot to dangle in front of the team as far as postseason play goes. Right now, if I had to wager, I would say probably not. But I do think if they can at least go 500, if they can get 6-6 out of the gate, I think that'll give the staff something to build on. And then also to recruit too, because I don't think there's any question that with as many Tennessee volunteers that have hit the portal, and I think that right now the volunteers are going to be looked at as a very nice and appealing destination for offensive players that are looking to go somewhere else and be coached by Josh Heupel and this staff. Mm-hmm. I do think also that defensive players can see that there are open spots available, immediate playing time, veteran players. But I do think that if Tennessee can just weather the storm this first year, and I think it has a schedule that would allow them to weather it, I think that it will be something they can build on. So I would go ahead and just say I'll put $1 on the yes side.
There are several swing games with this year's team. I think Pitt is one of them.
Yes.
I think it's one of them. And in regard to that investigation, as we mentioned earlier, with Dondi Plowman on Volkos last night saying that she had a briefing on it last week and that they're hoping that in the next 3 weeks to get it to conclude the investigation. And we're going to be done with our part, is the way she put it. And then the NCAA is in there with us. Hopefully they'll speed up whatever they then have to do. So I think having the NCAA in there as a part of that is a good move by Tennessee to help expedite this situation. So the history of Tennessee tells you that since Philip Fulmer was fired, he's not going to make it. I think one of the key things for him in making it as to whether he can get to that level or that number or not is going to be the guy we've heard from today, and that is Tim Banks, the defensive coordinator. Yeah. If the defense can hang in there and do a decent enough job, and my definition of a decent job is, it was kind of like twofold. One, you got to win. That's a measuring stick. And the other one is just if you can make a key stop when you need to, last 4 minutes of a game or whatever, maybe it's the end of a half that's important.
Right.
But if you can just make some key stops at important times, I think that can help Tennessee get over the hump. But the defense, I expect them to give up a pretty decent amount of yards and points, but they just have to be able to make some key stops at certain moments to provide Tennessee with the opportunity to get to a 6-6 record this year.
And as we've seen, the way the game is going now, your defense doesn't have to be great. It just needs to be able to slow down the other side, because you know your offense, if it clicks, is going to be able to get other opportunities to perhaps cash in on more points.
I'm excited to see what this offense can do, and I'm also concerned about the offensive line. But if that offensive line holds up, I think this will be a fun offense to watch.
I think so as well. Jimmy, have a great night.
John, you too.
Sure do appreciate it. SEC basketball tonight with three games on the schedule. LSU at Georgia, Florida at Auburn, Ole Miss at Missouri. Tennessee plays tomorrow night. That does it for today's edition of Sports Talk.